The 80s, man, arguably a decade featuring some of the greatest music ever made. However, stuck way down in a hole, just like Baby Jessica, are also some songs that were less than great. So let's put together a rescue team and unfortunately unearth some of these very unexceptional tracks on this all-new episode. What's up? Sidebar. When I say what's up, it reminds me. So when I was a freshman in high school, I had gone up to the King Road grocery store. I don't remember. It was a Thriftway, a Safeway, whatever it was.
Thriftway, yeah.
Yeah. And my dad sent me up there to buy, laundry detergent, something like that.
Okay.
So I'm up there buying it and I'm standing in line and I'm this little freshman, big glasses, weigh like $1.50, maybe. Uh-huh. And behind me in line, two guys walked up, and they were from our school.
Okay.
So there are two of them much bigger than me, and I'd seen them around the halls, and they were kind of pretty cool guys, I think, because they were talking to what we would have considered some of the attractive girls. Uh-huh. They played football. It was a whole thing. So they look at me, because I'm staring at them now like a weirdo, and they're like, hey, man, what's up? So because of my social inadequacies, you'd think the proper response would have been nothing, what's up with you, or something like that, right? No. I went into a 2-minute tirade telling them exactly what was up. I said, well, I was at home playing Double Dribble on the Nintendo. My dad made me come up here to buy laundry detergent. Meanwhile, the lady's waiting for me to pay for this whole thing. Mm. And they're just standing there. And when I get done with this story, they both look at me and they go, cool, man. And then I walk out. And the whole 10-minute walk home, I'm like, God, I'm an idiot. Like, what kind of moron? So I went over it in my head, but I was a social pariah. And the next week, to make it worse, I was like at a water fountain and one of them walked by me and we locked eyes and he goes, hey man, how'd that laundry detergent work out? And then he just kept walking and Ryan was laughing.
Yeah.
And so, anyway, I digress. Welcome to Totally 80s and 90s Recall. This is a podcast where we'll take a look at everything the radical decades of the 1980s and 90s had to offer, from music and movies to television and pop culture, and apparently moments of my utter embarrassment as a youth. If you're new to the show, be excited that you found us because you're about to have an awesome time. And for all of our returning listeners and subscribers, it's great to have you back. I am one of your hosts, David, joined as always by someone who always wished he'd seen the California Raisins live and probably didn't explain to random people what he was doing at the grocery store. It is my much cooler friend, Rob.
Oh, I don't know about that. Gosh, the Raisins in concert would have been good.
Yeah, I bet.
By the way, speak of detergent, you smell really nice today.
Stop it.
Yeah, you're whatever you're using over there does. Made the studio smell very nice today.
All temperature.
Oh, that's nice. Is it really? No. Oh, okay.
I think it's a Tide Pod or something.
No, I don't know. Yeah, well, whatever you're doing your laundry, it's very nice.
That's good.
This episode goes out to all of our listeners abroad or on the other side of the pond, as some say. We might be oceans apart day after day, and you might be slowly going insane. We know you hear our voices on the line, but it doesn't stop the pain. Here's the real question Dave and I are asking. If we see you next to never, how can we say forever? Maybe you took for granted all the times that you thought would last somehow. Maybe you hear the laughter and taste the tears, but Dave and I can't get near you now. Oh, can't you see it? You've got us going crazy too. You wonder how we can survive this relationship, but in the end, if it means we're with you, Dave and I will take the chance. If you get nothing from today's episode, Dave and I want you to know this. Wherever you go, whatever you do, Dave and I will be right here waiting for you. Whatever it takes or how your heart breaks, Dave and I will be right here waiting for you.
I think I like that song, but that's fine. I see you're poking fun at it, but I think it's something I would listen to once in a while.
Yeah, I figured.
So has some easy listening adult contemporary to it.
Okay.
You think so? All right. Mm-mm. Well, our folks at home can try and figure it out and see if it sparks any memories.
Yeah.
I know there's a good hairdo involved, so if that helps anyone.
There is a good hairdo.
Yeah, yeah, quite the mullet, I believe, if I remember back correctly. So
I think kind of a classy mullet, though.
Yeah.
If there is such a thing.
Maybe some good hairspray.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Don't just let it go with reckless abandon.
No.
And I also think jeans tucked into sneakers with the tongues out. Yes. I believe I saw a concert like that once.
Yep. Yep.
That's a good look in the 80s. Nobody does that much anymore.
They should bring it back.
Well, now they have the tight pants at the bottom, like the joggers and things, so you don't have to roll or put them in the tongues.
So I can't do the tight pants.
No, neither of us can do tight pants. No. We should stay with our loose pants.
I have to do loose pants.
Yeah. You're like that kid on Hot for Teacher. Your socks are too loose.
My socks are too loose. Yeah.
You're not like the other fellas.
Yep.
So, Well, hopefully you can tighten those socks up and then tell us what we're covering for this week's episode.
So we're looking at a 3-year time span.
Yes.
1987 to 1989. But we're looking at what we consider the worst songs of that 3-year
or a nice way to say it, not so greatest hits.
Oh, yeah, not so greatest hits. I like that better. Let's go. So the not so greatest hits of 1987 to 1989.
87 to 89. Now, we previously did this from 90 to 92.
Yeah.
So now this gives a 6-year window of trash for people to listen to.
Yeah.
Right? So it's going to be exciting. Well, as Rob said, we're covering the last 3 years of the 80s, a time where Rob and I are coming into our own. And for 2 of the years, Rob and I meet, and our friendship began to bloom.
Oh, that's nice.
So I was wandering around the interwebs, Rob, and I found some info that would have been relevant to us.
Okay.
I discovered a reputable publication called The Mini Page, published by the accredited reporters at Hooper Avenue Elementary School, located in Toms River, New Jersey. A survey of fifth graders in 1988 yielded some interesting pop culture observations. And Rob, in 1988, you were a fifth grader.
I was.
So this should be right up your alley. Everything here should be just how you felt.
Mr. Rager. That's who I had. Nice. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
By the way, my last base in the Air Force before retiring was in New Jersey, literally 10 minutes from Toms River.
Oh.
And who knows? Some of our New Jersey listeners may have contributed to this newspaper article back in fifth grade in 1988. So let's kick it off. First pop culture thing I saw. Changes made if they were made president. The number one answer was no drugs, which is good because when I was in New Jersey, marijuana is legal there now. So good. Didn't work out so well. World peace. That seems like a good one at all times.
Yeah.
I found this one odd for fifth graders, but lower taxes. Fifth graders have a lot of tax problems. Not sure, but lower taxes was there.
Dang, and those taxes.
Taxes on fifth graders. And my favorite, invent a car for kids. So back in 1988, they wanted their own car, just for kids. So, next thing, favorite authors, one, Beverly Cleary.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Very good. Yeah. Right. And the second one, Judy Blume.
Oh, I was going to say Judy Blume. Yeah.
Judy Blume, famous for fudge.
Oh yeah.
Super fudge.
And are you there, God?
It's me, Margaret. A very moving book for those that haven't read it.
Did you read it?
I did.
Never read it.
I had to read it.
You had to.
My fifth grade teacher thought it would be funny to assign me that book. I read it, had to give an oral book report on Are You There? That book's maybe not for a fifth grade boy.
I was going to say that's a lot of girl stuff.
I must increase my bust and all that for my fifth grade class. And they all had a good laugh. And Mr. Hinkston thought that was a fun thing. So good for him. All right. So favorite stars. Guess a favorite star. 1988. You were a fifth grader.
Oh my gosh, Pee Wee Herman.
No,
absolutely not. Not even on the list.
Not even on the list.
Arnold.
No, not even on the list.
I don't know.
All right, we got Kirk Cameron.
Oh,
We got Michael J. Fox.
Oh yeah,
Justine Bateman. Apparently, some Family Ties fans out there in New Jersey.
Okay. Yeah.
Tom Cruise.
Wow.
And the number one choice.
Oh,
Alf.
Oh, we've talked about him before.
We have.
Yeah, so TV show.
Alf was the number one choice for the fifth graders in Toms River, New Jersey.
He's very popular.
Popular words and sayings the kids said that they liked the most.
Like, totally rad.
Rad was number one. Yeah.
I got that one.
Bogus.
Oh, I forgot about bogus.
Bogus. Chill out. Grow up. And awesome, which we use quite a bit, but awesome's good.
My wife also tells me to grow up.
Yeah, that's good. Maybe she got it in fifth grade. I don't know.
But I don't tell my wife to chill out.
You try, see what happens.
I don't want to
do
that. Okay,
I got you.
Well, I've done it. It doesn't end.
Yeah, it doesn't work well. So popular clothing for girls, mini skirts, which I approve of, denim clothing, Jackets.
Lots of denim.
Denim was there.
88 denim.
Yeah. Esprit fashions.
Yes.
You know, lots of things with Esprit.
What about jelly bracelets on there or anything?
It did not fall on the list. Sorry. I think jelly bracelets were relevant. They just, these particular children, it was not at the
not
top
in New
of
Jersey.
Their list. Yes. Yeah. Popular clothing for boys, jean jackets, OP and Gotcha t-shirts.
You had a jean jacket.
I did.
Yeah. I never owned the jean
jacket. I had two jean jackets.
Yeah,
I had the jean jacket like your dad had.
Oh, with the white fur
inside. Yeah,
but that's all my ever dad wore.
That was my warm jacket.
He wore that all the time. Yeah,
so. And for our boys, too, Bugle Boy clothes.
Remember
the Bugle Boys?
Yeah. I remember the Bugle
Boys. Yeah. Top musicians. You want to take a crack at a couple top musicians?
Oh, my gosh. No. Okay. New Kids on the Block.
No.
They weren't on the list.
They weren't on the list.
All right.
88 might be a little early.
A little early for
so
them?
We got U2.
No, yeah.
Tiffany.
Oh.
INXS. Debbie Gibson. And, of course, Bon Jovi, it's New Jersey after all, Rob. Come on. I mean, who doesn't love Bon Jovi? They still love him today in New Jersey.
The hometown favorite.
So, and finally, last category, favorite toys. We got skateboards, BMX bikes, Nintendo, and electronic pianos. I think there was a keyboard phase there for a while in the 80s. I had one. You could make dog sounds on it and all kinds of.
I didn't know that was a phase.
It had like a fart noise and stuff. That's good. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So
you're like, I had one.
I did. I got one for Christmas one year, and I'm not musical at all, but I made the funny noises on it. And so it's good. Had like 40 program noises, and you just go with those.
That's fine.
So, yeah. So that was from the mini page.
And that's 1988. What was the name of the school?
You went back on me.
Oh, wow.
The name of the school is Hoover.
Hoover.
It is Hooper.
Hooper
Avenue Elementary School.
Okay. All right.
That's what it's called.
Very cool. Well,
very cool. Yeah.
Thank you, New Jersey.
Well, one extra little plug for the mini page. There was a kick-ass recipe for spaghetti sauce, and the fifth grader who contributed it was not credited. So, but after reading it, it looked really good. They went with ground beef in their sauce. I prefer Italian sausage as the protein, but that's okay. But I'm sure it was tasty nonetheless. So great job to whichever fifth grader submitted that to the school paper. Thank you for the spaghetti sauce recipe. Right?
Okay. Yeah.
No.
I like a good spaghetti sauce recipe.
Yeah. It had all the elements. There's garlic, all the good things were happening.
But you prefer Italian sausage?
To the ground beef, yes.
Oh, just the regular ground beef.
Right. Yeah. When we make ours, Italian sausage.
Okay.
You can go with ground beef?
I think we just do the ground beef.
Okay.
Yeah, we don't do anything.
If you try the Italian sausage,
you think it's.
It'll crank it up a notch.
It'll up the game?
It will.
All right.
It'll make it more gourmet.
Oh.
So if you're looking to get a little more gourmet, just slip it in there and see what happens. And then the kids will be like, what is this? What am I eating? You'll be like, it's Italian sausage.
Yeah.
And then they'll be like, this is great.
It's fantastic.
Yeah. And then you'll be the hero of spaghetti sauce.
There you go.
I don't know if you make the spaghetti sauce.
I don't.
But you could at least contribute the idea to throw in the Italian sausage.
I will do that.
Well, you can. Yeah. It's up to you. Maybe I'll have you over and you can test it first. And then we'll have a spaghetti feed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we can rehash that on there. Because I'm sure the last 2 minutes of us talking about spaghetti is what everybody wants to hear.
Everybody in their cars and
getting
like, ready for work. They're
stop talking about spaghetti.
This is dumb.
This is really dumb.
What are they doing?
All right. Well, we're turning the radio up, finding Casey Kasem and tuning into the not top 40 songs from 1987 to 1989. Well, folks, what is one of the worst things you could possibly do? Of course, that would be missing any episodes of Totally 80s and 90s Recall. So take a quick moment, if you haven't already done so, and hit that subscribe button and share this episode with someone that you know would like Totally Dig, relive in the 80s and 90s. By doing that, you'll guarantee no one will ever want to gag you with a spoon, Rob.
Yeah, I didn't like being gagged with a spoon.
The fact that you were troubles me. So that's good. So, well, before we jump into our songs, we have a quick disclaimer. We like disclaimers.
Yeah.
The displeasing sound of today's musical choices are based strictly on the opinions of Rob and I.
Mm-hmm.
We understand many of these had commercial success for some reason, and we take nothing away from the artists for their musical choices, as Rob and I have never had a song that anyone's listened to, so we are obviously not experts. And really, I just don't want the artists to come after me. So, we also realize that some of these songs may actually hold some nostalgia and inexplicably maybe songs some of you our awesome listeners, who we love very much, really like.
Yeah.
I'd be confused by that, but that's fine. Yeah. Despite all that, we think they're bad, and we're going to just have some fun with them with no actual harm meant. So perhaps if you find yourself getting upset over the next hour listening to this episode, wander over to the medicine cabinet, and as Rob said, he wouldn't tell his wife, just take a chill pill.
Oh, yeah. No, that's bad.
That's bad?
Yeah.
All right. Well, no. Just to throw a curveball for you, Rob, because I know you love curveballs.
Boy.
You're always good at hitting them.
Yeah,
right. I will, for this episode, flip the script, and I'm going to play my songs first.
What?
Yeah, we don't do that very often around here.
Wow.
Normally, Rob gets to lead everything off. He gets to steal all the thunder that is to be stolen.
Yeah, there's no thunder being stolen. There's no I don't steal any thunder. What are we talking about?
There is some thunder being stolen. So
I will tell you, go back a little bit. You talked about a curveball.
Yes.
Played baseball my whole life.
Whole life.
From the time I was a little guy, T-ball, all the way up.
Gotcha.
Got to high school. Doubt he listens, but he might. Tommy Wheeler, high school. We're out in the backfield. We're practicing. He throws a curveball that I thought was going to go in my ear hole.
Yes.
I fall out of the batter's box.
Yes.
Everybody kind of goes, ooh. Like.
Yeah. You look like a fool.
I get up and I was like, well, what was everybody looking at? Because that thing was going to go to my ear.
Catcher never moved.
No, never moved.
No.
I quit.
I can.
I didn't play after that. Because like, yeah, I was used to.
So I could just hit.
Throw it down the middle. And
yeah. I could hit a curveball. But I went to, when I was in college for a little while there, I was trying out with the baseball team. Mm-hmm. And we were out doing batting practice. And a guy named Dave Veras showed up. He was an alumni. Mm-hmm. He was a pitcher for the Colorado Rockies. And so he came out and they're like, yeah, he's going to throw. And I'm up to bat and the dude's throwing. And he did one of those. He threw it at my ear hole at about 93. I ducked, and when everybody was laughing, I knew I had struck out. So I just left the field.
Nope, I'm done.
And so, I was good at that. So, all right. Well,
wow, since you're going first.
I am going to go first. Yeah, our curveballs just we're out in left fields. We got lots of weird stories.
This is where you would say something like, "Well, Dave, give us your number 7."
I am going to give you my number 7. Okay. So, all right. And I want to reiterate all these songs here. I don't like any of them. So, do you think we'll have any in the 3-year window? Last time we had like three, I think, that crossed over.
Our number 1 might be the same.
I would be shocked.
It's a 3-year period.
Yeah, I gotcha. It seems like there's a lot of choices.
Yeah. So we'll see. I don't know.
You tend to think differently than I do.
And a lot of you're going to like a lot of mine.
Ah, see, we're already off to a bad start.
And there's a few of mine that I will openly admit before we begin that you used a phrase in one of our last episodes. You talked about lovable garbage.
Yes.
And that was a phrase from another podcast. Yeah. Some of this stuff, I will admit if it came on the radio, I'd probably hum to it, but if I had a choice,
I'd
push next.
Okay.
So
I'm going to lead you off with a song that you always push next to. And I'm just going to let you hear it. Then after you're done vomiting in your mouth, we'll discuss it a little bit.
Did you ever know that is bad.
This is bad.
This is bad.
Bette makes a second appearance on one of these episodes. She's a great artist, just not here.
Oh,
wait for it.
Oh, I love it.
Is that inspirational, Ron?
It's all right.
It's all right. Yeah. It's not putting you in all the feels.
Yeah. You're the wind beneath my wings.
Well, this is, as Rob just said, Wind Beneath My Wings by Bette Midler. Much like From a Distance, this is not much fun to listen to, and the synthesizer is just awful. I don't know who's doing that, but I don't even think it's in key, actually, but it's pretty bad. This song was released in February of 1989 and found immense chart success again somehow. I don't know what's going on. However, it hit number 1 on the US Hot 100. That's bad, folks. There were other songs to listen to. Help me out here. Also number 1 in Australia and top 5 in 4 other countries. I'm so disappointed. This song won a Grammy for Record of the Year in 1990, beating out such songs as The End of Innocence, She Drives Me Crazy by the Fine Young Cannibals, and We Didn't Start the Fire, all superior songs. Somehow Bette was able to squeeze that out. It won a second Grammy for Song of the Year, again beating out Don Henley, Billy Joel, and Mike and the Mechanics. So big time boo on the Grammys for that one. That was a bad job. All those songs are way better than that, and you should listen to all of them much more than you listen to The Wind Beneath My Wings.
Yeah, it's a bad song.
It was featured on the big time movie Beaches.
Oh, yeah.
So just as bad as the song, by the way.
People like that movie, though.
No, it's awful. Yeah. So it helped its popularity, though. This is actually a cover, first recorded in 1982, again in 83 by Lou Rawls and Gary Morris, before Bett got a hold of it and destroyed it. The 82 version by Colleen Hewitt, still slow, but a little better and not so poppy and sappy. Lou Rawls's was actually pretty good. He had a little soul in it, a little more upbeat, had a little bit of a little more flavor. And the Gary Morris was a country version. So a big thumbs down to that one. That didn't speak to me in any capacity. So, but all three of them still more enjoyable than Bette Midler.
What was the Bette Midler song that made our last one?
From a Distance.
From a Distance. Yes. So, that was a cover too, I think, if I remember right. Yeah. And then she got a hold of it. And
then just destroyed it, yes.
Wow, she was on a roll in the 80s. If
that's what you want to call it.
Grabbing people's songs. And then,
just take it and see, how can I just terrorize this song? Let's see what I can do with it.
All right.
That's good.
Okay, so also reversing roles, this is where I think I would be curious to know how the rest of your songs have to be pretty bad.
Pretty stinky.
If this is how you're starting.
I think they're all pretty stinky.
Okay.
And I have good, I think I have good justification before why they're all bad songs.
Okay. Well, I'm going to give you my number 7.
All right.
And you are going to like it.
Of course.
And then your fans online are going to have
a field day. If you play Chicago, I'm leaving. So. You know I like this song. This is a great song. This is. Did you understand the assignment we're doing here today?
I don't like this song.
Well, I don't like that you don't like this song.
I've always thought the premise of this song, I thought was dumb.
It's great. He's walking by his ex. Don't look at me because I want to forget you. And I'm a mess. I don't want you to see me.
Okay, but okay. So. It starts with her. She calls him.
Yes. Call me up this morning. Talk about a new love you found.
Why would you do that?
To let you know we're
done.
So
you're done.
Yeah.
You're already done. You don't have to call me.
Yeah, to rub it in. She sucks.
To tell me, hey, by the way,
yeah,
I found somebody else.
Yeah, she's sadistic.
I don't need that. Don't just leave.
It's
go.
It's not a need factor.
Don't call me back up. And
she's just mean. Anyway. She's ruthless.
I think that's stupid.
He's in his feels.
It's dumb.
All right.
This is 88. It's an 88 power ballad.
It is.
By
it
Chicago.
It's fantastic. It shouldn't be anywhere near this list. No. This is terrible.
So I kind of very much, you said earlier that a lot of these songs will have chart success.
Yes. Right?
So this topped the Billboard Hot 100 for 2 weeks in December of 88, the group's third and final number one hit.
Yeah.
It followed If You Leave Me Now and Hard to Say I'm Sorry. It was also the number one song of the, this is interesting. It was the number one song on the 1989 year-end Billboard Hot 100 chart, even though it never held the number one spot at all in 1989.
No, that means it charted so well all year.
It said this is because Billboard's year-end chart covers the charts as far back as late November of the previous year. So it was still hanging on.
Fire.
It's certified gold. The song is the band's only number one single following the departure of
Peter Cetera. That's right.
The song was written by Diane Warren, one of the most successful songwriters of her era. She wrote I Don't Want to Miss a Thing by Aerosmith.
Mm.
Great song.
That's okay.
Love Will Lead You Back by Taylor Dane. And
like
Have You Ever for Brandy.
Mm.
So the premise is the songwriter says the song was inspired by a friend who worked in her building. This woman had divorced her husband, but they agreed to still be friends. It was clear that the guy was hoping to get back together, and he was devastated when he found out she was going to marry someone else.
Ugh.
I just think it's stupid.
It's great.
Little trivia for you. You may or may not know that the band Chicago started out as they were called The Big Thing.
Mm.
I didn't know that. They tried other names, however, and it also it is also the name of their first album. What was it? Here's some choices. Was it A, Bobby Charles and the Wanderers? B, The Mystics? C, Missing Links? Or D, Chicago Transit Authority?
D.
Oh,
excellent.
Nice job.
I watched a documentary
on Chicago. And I will tell you, the other choices were also names that they considered.
Oh, okay.
So Bobby Charles and the Wanderers, The Mystics, and Missing Links. So anyway.
Nice. Yeah. That is a horrible start.
I know. I knew it.
You should apologize to everyone listening right now.
I don't like that song.
Well, whatever.
I think the premise is dumb. I've always thought it's a catchy hook, but then I listen to it and I think,
well,
why would you call him up and say, hey, just want to let you know, we're not together, not very nice. I'm getting together with somebody else. And then, but then he like says, don't look at me. Why did he just say, don't call me, you dummy?
No,
I don't like you anymore.
He still has some feelings. You know what feelings are, Rob?
Well,
all right. She's
I struggle with emotion.
So, after my number seven, the Bette Midler start, I may have some controversial picks here because I've got some, what would be considered high esteemed artists, but I think kind of wrote some bad songs here.
Okay, that's fair.
And number six falls directly into that category. So I'm going to play it and then we'll let you make a decision.
This Sting.
I do not like this.
I like Sting, but yeah.
It's so poppy.
I like pop songs. This wouldn't do anything.
I don't know. He could be better than this.
Yeah.
I don't know who wrote that song, but it doesn't even sound, it's not even good writing. So
he probably wrote it.
Now, I know a lot of people love Sting, and I like him, especially with The Police. But some of his solo stuff gets a little erratic, and this doesn't do it for me at all. This was released in October 1987 and would go to number 7 on the U.S. Hot 100. So somehow, this was a top 10 hit. Not a ton of success anywhere else except Canada, where it also was in the top 10. The song is the exact opposite of how he sounded in The Police, because that was good.
I like The Police.
And this is bad. Yes.
I like The Police.
It feels overproduced. The synthesizer sounds really bad. Mm-hmm. And it just feels like he's desperately trying to be part of the late 80s pop sound. It doesn't work. Just do your normal sound. And I would have liked it a lot better.
Yeah.
The song was originally written for a beer commercial for Kirin Brewing Company in Japan. And it sounds exactly like that. It sounds like a beer commercial. Sting said they loved the song so much, even though it took him zero time to write it, which also sounds appropriate. The original recording included Eric Clapton on guitar, but I'll assume he smartly ran away for the radio version. During a tour with Annie Lennox in 2004, I will give some credit here, Sting and Annie performed this together, which initially sounds awful. However, I listened to it. They ditched the horrible synthesizer, brought back an actual electric guitar, slowed it down a little bit, and surprisingly, from a musical standpoint, it sounded better than the radio version here from 1987. In the end, however, the rhythm and the chorus, that together, are just a little grating and annoying to me. So Sting and I, for this song, we will not be together.
There are voices in entertainment that just kind of grate on me, or I don't hear. One is Kevin Costner.
Good.
I can't. I mean, I like some of his stuff, but musically.
And B.A.
Yeah, why don't I like B.A.?
No, he grates.
But musically, Sting, and like in country, Keith Urban.
No.
I can't get into Keith Urban. And no, I feel like Sting and Keith Urban for me sing at the same.
Oh.
Like, I don't know if it's frequency, and I don't like it.
If I get Sting in the right thing, I'm fine. Yes. But you like Fields of Gold, and that might be worse than this song. That
is a pretty song.
Yeah. All right. That might be worse than
this
song.
But I like The Police, though. But
The Police are good.
But yeah, that song, there's something about the frequency of that song I don't like.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel good.
The chorus is, I just don't like that background chorus. It sounds cheesy and poppy. Yeah. That's all it does. So you're better than that Sting.
You're better than that Sting. All right.
All right. You're number six.
My number six.
See if you can top Sting.
Ooh. You'll probably like this.
Oh, okay. Right. Well,
you'll probably be like, oh, this is. Do you know this one? I thought for sure you'd be like, this is a classic, man.
I'm going to shock you here. This doesn't sound good. I don't like this. This sounds like a hair metal group.
It was.
And it doesn't sound good. Little child. I don't like this. Who is this? Tesla?
It's a group called White Lion.
Oh, White Lion. Yes. Yes. This sucks.
Yeah.
This is someone's prom song, though.
Oh, absolutely. It's super depressing.
As bad as it is.
This is considered a power ballad. It's from a group called White Lion. It's 1988. Yeah. It's the biggest hit for them, obviously. Yeah. They're Brooklyn based. They broke up in 91. It says in one article I read, it says they're a Brooklyn based band, but then I found another article that they're a Danish American glam metal band. I don't know what the actual truth is, but it peaked at number 3 on the US Billboard Hot 100. Number 3. It was influenced by singer Mike Tramp's childhood. He said, I was around 5 or 6 when my father left us. My mom was left with 3 boys. So without a doubt, my own story is in that song. So it's really depressing. It was written during a devastating famine in Africa. And so Tramp's lyric is rather bleak, sympathizing with children who will grow up in a world of war and evil. Yeah, okay. It's really sad. Fun fact, the lead singer, Mike Tramp, went out of his way. So they were, if you saw pictures of them, they were a typical hair metal band from 88. And they were trying, they looked a lot like the other ones. But they went, it says Mike Tramp went out of his way to avoid lyrical cliches like parties and girls. Mm-hmm. This led to songs like Little Fighter. They had a song called Little Fighter. Here's the premise of their song, Little Fighter.
Oh my gosh.
It's about a Greenpeace fishing trawler that was sunk by the French government when it was sent to protest nuclear testing.
Oh, goodness.
That sounds like a song I want to listen to.
Hey,
you know what I need is a song about a Greenpeace fishing trawler that was sunk by the French government.
Yeah, you know what I would tell him is by avoiding singing about parties and girls, you also avoided success. So great job, buddy. Yep.
Nope.
Why not just stick to the formula? It wasn't difficult. No, it was right there.
They did nothing after
this. They did nothing.
So, no.
I would add that they did nothing during this. This is not a good song. All right. So, again, we had this conversation. I think the last time we did bad songs, the producer in the booth was like, "We got you, Mike. That sounded great." Yeah,
no. And I read another thing. It said this was written at a time when in the U.S. it was fairly 88. It was fairly prosperous. I mean, things are good. And this song came on the radio and it's super depressing.
People are like, turn it right off.
No.
Yeah. Well, I think they're trying to do a ballad, if you're going to do the ballad, it's got to be like a love ballad. That's what the girls like.
No.
But again, this guy hates everyone. That's why he put that song out. No. So, all right. Well, good pick. So you're 1 for 2.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. So, well, my number 5, look, I love cheesy 80s pop songs and cheesy 80s pop love songs. I really like, however, that's what this is. And I don't like it. I like that you know the words. Are you hearing this? Just listen.
Why do I know this? I know this.
This
good guitar solo. Come on. You like this?
No, I don't. It seems like I would.
Yeah, but no.
I don't.
It's bad. But it probably peaked at like 1.
I mean, do we even think that guy can sing all that good?
Is this
I
don't know. Like Donovan or something? No. Who is it? Who's this?
I'm about to tell you. You just won't give me a second.
All right. Sorry.
So this is Nothing's Gonna Change My Love for You by Glenn Medeiros.
Yes.
Yes. That was on the tip of your tongue.
It's in my...
Everyone's thinking of Glenn Medeiros.
It's in my cut list.
Well, the musical accompaniment on this song is pretty bad, I think, as you just heard. There's some really basic drums and a very plain 80s guitar. Yeah. You said good guitar. I would say, no, that's just a plain... phantom 80s guitar in the background. This song reminds me of someone singing a cover on Star Search where you think, man, the Star Search house band is not very good. Right? That's how I feel listening to this song. Also, the lead singer's voice, as I just said, I don't know if it's any good. It sounds pretty flat. Nothing memorable here whatsoever. No. It's not at all. This was released February of 1987 and is a cover of a 1985 song by George Benson, which is way better. All right.
You thought I listened to George Benson one is way better?
Yes. The 85 version did not chart well, but somehow this version was a monster. It was number 12 on the US Hot 100, but overseas, my goodness, Rob, it hit number 1 or number 2 in 14 countries, which is entirely too many countries. The song was featured on many 80s daytime soap operas, which is the benchmark of any great 80s song, getting on the soaps. It was on Days of Our Lives, As the World Turns, General Hospital.
Sure.
One review I read said it is a tacky, chintzy bit of adult contemporary that practically oozes saccharin. I couldn't have said that better myself. That sounds accurate to me. This just seems like a forgettable pop song, unless you're Glenn, who probably laughed all the way to the bank.
Oh, absolutely.
But this just falls flat for me into the musical junk drawer of generic 80s cheesiness.
Yeah, I agree. This is a good one. Good. Yeah, I remember... researching it, and I found that one, and I didn't know it enough, but I remember hearing it. And
if you heard the 85 one, it was actually decent. The way, but he's a better singer.
Yeah.
I think the music was a little more, had a little more oomph to it.
Good old Glenn.
Glenn.
Whatever, what did he do? Did he go on to do anything else?
He did another song.
He did?
In like 1990 with Bobby Brown.
Oh, wow.
And it actually was not very bad. I actually don't mind that one.
When you get to pair with Bobby Brown.
Well, anything with Bobby Brown is probably pretty good.
Yeah, it's good.
And Bobby Brown of New Edition, not Bobby Brown of like Cherry Pie Video.
So oh, right.
Just let's clear different. That up.
Yeah. Yes. All right.
All right.
Okay.
Well, let's see if you can top Glenn Medeiros.
Oh, well, I might.
Okay.
Okay. Here we go.
Ridiculous. You're doing this on purpose just to piss me off today. This is Peterson, Terry, and Cher.
Enough said.
This is fantastic. Listen to this.
Enough said.
Oh, my gosh. This is... You're just doing it to upset me today. Nah. Chicago and Peter in the same list?
That's right.
Boo.
Yeah.
Boo to listen, everyone. But I used to do this song. Forever
you and me. Awful. After all. See, I'll give Peter this. I'd listen to it for Peter. Mm-hmm. You threw Cher in there. And
I like the Cher. It's a good contrast to Peter's voice.
What?
You're wrong.
No.
You're wrong.
And I think Peter will agree.
Explain to us how you're wrong. So
no, I just don't like go. It. I don't like it.
Whatever.
Anyway, this is a duet by American singers Cher and Peter Cetera. It was released in March of 89. It was used as the love theme song for the film Chances Are.
Yeah, I'm boycotting your list.
I never saw the movie. It was with Cybill Shepherd, Robert Downey Jr., and Ryan O'Neal.
That sounds good. After this, we should watch that.
No, I don't want to.
You make some popcorn. We're going to watch a movie.
No, that's dumb.
No, it's good.
Nominated for Best Original Song at the Academy Awards in 89.
I mean, come on.
From Cher. It was on her 19th album, Heart of Stone. And it didn't come onto a Peter Cetera album until 97.
Yeah.
On You're the Inspiration, it was a collection of like his greatest hits or something. Peaked at number
which
six.
There are a lot.
On the U.S. Billboard Hot 100. It was Cher's first solo number one hit on the Adult Contemporary chart.
Great.
The song was ranked as number 79 on the U.S. Billboard year-end Hot 100 singles of 98. It was certified gold. Here's an interesting fact. Cher and Cetera have never performed this song together live.
Okay.
Yeah, because I think that's probably best.
No, it's not best.
I think that's
good. They should record live.
It's awful. It was written by Dean Pritchard Dean Pitchford. And he wrote the screenplay and all the songs for Footloose.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, there you go. Fun fact. Did you know that Peter Cetera was a longtime resident of Ketchum, Idaho?
Oh, nice.
He has lived in Idaho since the mid-1980s. I didn't know that. Yeah, he's an Idaho guy.
We could find him, maybe.
We could go look him up.
He's close.
And we could say, explain the whole share.
And then he would send you a picture of his bank account and go, explanation over.
Yeah, well, that's true. Mostly people would do that. We'd be like,
explanation
that one
done.
Little song bought this.
Yeah, it bought this ranch I live on in Ketchum, Idaho.
No. I don't know if I ever said, but the name of that song was After All.
After
I don't
all.
Think I said that.
And you didn't have to because anyone knows After All.
And I know now people will get on the YouTube and leave little comments and go.
Well, you've put Chicago and Peter Cetera on this list. You're going to get a lot of hate for that because those are 80s, like you like
that's
to
fine.
Crap on this
that's
BA's
fine.
And 80s icon.
And I know
thing,
there are people out there
icons.
That agree with me. They just,
nobody agrees with
too
you.
Chicken to get on it's and
terrible.
Say something.
Only one's going to agree with there. You. Only one's going to agree with you is probably my wife. That's it. Because she doesn't.
Hey, that's it. I'll take that.
You'll take
if
it.
If I can get.
All right,
Laurel's fine. Approval. Thank you, Laurel. She knows.
She knows. Okay. She does know. She knows everything. We'll just get that out of the way. All right. So that takes me to my number four song.
Oh.
This takes me back to one of those prominent artists who decided to wade into the pool of nonsense.
Okay.
Right here. So here it comes.
Oh, I almost picked this. Groovy Kind of Love, baby. I almost picked this.
This is so
I almost picked awful. It. I almost put it on my list.
This is, I mean,
I don't like
it feels
this.
Like the guy playing the piano is slowly dying while he's playing the piano.
And it never picks up.
No.
It stays this.
Yes.
There's never like it. You expect it to have a crescendo and then nothing.
It does nothing.
I don't like this.
This is bad.
This is good pick.
Yes.
Yep. And I like a lot of his stuff.
The name of it, Groovy Kind of Love. Yeah. It's 1980 something. What are you talking about here, Phil? This is bad stuff, man. You're better than this. Well, fans, if you've ever had trouble sleeping, forget Ambien. Just get a prescription for this song. And I promise you'll go right to sleep. We're going to add this to the list of songs I like to call covers no one has asked for. This was originally recorded twice in 1965, with the most popular version being by the Mindbenders, which is a superior song, again, that Phil just had to destroy. He extracted the guitars, which they had in theirs and sounded good, and what little bit of a beat and vibe it had, slowed it down to a crawl to ultimately bore everyone to death. All right, so Phil's version was released in August of 88 as part of the Buster motion picture soundtrack. Another movie I didn't see, starred Dudley Moore.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, didn't know that one. Wow. So, as usual, I am in the minority on my distaste for this song. Somehow, this went to number one on the U.S. Hot 100.
No, it didn't.
And U.S. Adult Contemporary charts overseas, no slouch. This hit number one, Rob, in, this is upsetting, Canada, Belgium, Denmark, the Netherlands, Ireland, Portugal, South Africa, and the U.K. It was also a top 10 in 8 other countries and was the 40th most popular song for all of 1988 in West Germany.
Wow.
It was nominated for a Grammy, losing to Bobby McFerrin's Don't Worry, Be Happy.
Yeah.
So this, as I stated earlier, was the number one song for 2 weeks in 88. And even crazier are the songs below it that never hit number one. Wild Wild West. Don't Be Cruel by before mentioned Bobby Brown.
Oh, yeah.
Bad Medicine.
Oh.
Simply Irresistible.
Uh-huh.
I could go on and on. There were a lot of songs. And he beat all these songs out. So I don't know what people were listening to in 1988. Sorry, folks. So if you're looking
bad picks.
Yeah. If you're looking to not be the star of any cocktail party or family gathering, simply play Groovy Kind of Love. And I guarantee you will not have to interact with anyone else for the rest of the evening, because everyone will hate you.
Yeah. So I don't like that.
Oh, it's so bad. It puts me to sleep. I feel like feel like when I wanted to introduce this song, I wanted to do it like one of those NPR hosts. This is Phil Collins with Groovy Kind of Love.
And when you listen to the lyrics, it is, I mean, it's a groovy kind of, it's a happy song. It's supposed to be.
The
message is clear.
If you listen to the 65 version, it's got a little more of a beat to it.
But
Phil just, he just set fire to it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, my number four, I don't have here we go.
Okay. False start, folks.
Yeah. So this one is, I'm going to just come out and say that I have a little bit of my next two songs follow a similar pattern, but here we go.
Are they the pattern to upset me more? Is this Bruce Willis?
It is Bruce Willis.
Yeah. Is this when he was doing his, the video's even worse than the song. He's dancing around in that bar.
Yeah, it's like a lie. Like
he's singing into a pool cue, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is one of those where it's like somebody advised him, hey, but he used to do like harmonica and he was like a blues guy, right?
Yeah.
Oh, you wanted to play that little breakdown?
Oh, yeah.
Is that the best part?
Yeah, this is Respect Yourself by Bruce Willis, 1987. American actor Bruce Willis. I don't remember this. I remember the video. I remember the song, but he performed under a fictitious alter ego named Bruno Radellini.
No. Smart. Good name. Who told him to pick that?
Yeah. Started, and that was a short-lived singing career. This is a cover of Respect Yourself. It was originally a song by American R&B gospel group, the Staple Singers, that was released in 71. And this came off of his album called The Return of Bruno. And it features, probably the best part of the song, features backing vocals by the Pointer Sisters.
Ugh. They're better than that too.
Right. So you got a lot of stuff going on there. Yeah. And that's all I got for it because I just bad.
It's bad.
And
I don't like it.
I think anytime we get into, we've talked earlier about anytime you get the actor
turned
musician, I think it's because even like 50, we've talked about Eddie Murphy,
some of that stuff. That song. Calm yourself down.
Stop. Yeah. It's not good.
Better calm yourself down.
But fun fact, Willis divides his time between Malibu, California and Haley, Idaho. We've had two Idaho people. And,
nice.
Yeah. So anyway.
So and I want to be clear. We love Bruce Willis, the Die Hard. John McClane, right? But this doesn't work.
I respect him as an actor. This
doesn't work.
Stay in your lane, man.
Yeah. Zed's dead, baby. All right. Well, that takes me to my number three, which I think is supposed to be a party dance song.
Okay.
That's what it's classified as. But it does not make me want to do anything. So.
I have to check my notes. Nope, I took it out. This was in my cut. I had this as a cut.
Nice.
Oh yeah, this is dumb.
Really dumb.
This is bad. No. Yeah. But if I remember it in the notes, it did really well.
So I'll start by saying, particularly to our friends in Australia.
Oh, that's right.
Kylie Minogue is great. She's definitely plum worthy. All right, I promise you. But this song, however,
plum worthy
is not. In fact, it shrivels the plums. This was released in 87 Down Under. And again in 88 worldwide. Yes, this also falls into the covers no one asked for category.
Yeah.
And I didn't like listening to it then, and I hated it even more during my research now. However, despite its average and generic sound, commercially, it was huge, Rob, going to number 3 on the US Hot 100, number 1 in Australia, no surprise, and 4 other countries. It was also top 10 in 10 other countries. So a lot of locomotion happening everywhere in 1987. Mm-hmm. This is a cover of an original 1962 number one song by Little Eva, and it was also covered in 1973 by the Grand Funk Railroad that also went to number one on the U.S. Hot 100. So apparently when you record this song, it's destined to be a number one hit, or at least top 5. Kylie's version was included on the Arthur 2 soundtrack.
Also Dudley Moore. That's nuts.
Two Dudley Moore references today, folks.
And two Idaho references.
Oh, yeah. And this was nominated for Best International Single at the Canadian Music Industry Awards, losing to George Michael's Faith. So at least somebody had some sense.
Okay, that's better. That's better.
Those two should not have been considered in the same category or musical stratosphere, if we're really being honest with each other. So,
wow.
We've mentioned it before, but this song belongs at every roller skating rink in 1988. Yes. If for no other reason, Rob, than to give the kids a chance at the birthday party to sing and eat some cake.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, so this is that. Everyone's skating. This comes on. You're like, hey, let's do presents. It's so silly. And I remember it being silly in 87, but people liked it. And the video, oh, man.
Mm-hmm.
The leotards, big hair.
Pink, like a lot of pastel.
Yeah. Girls kind of just dancing, generic. You know, dancing. Yeah.
It almost doesn't sound real. You know? Like it sounds like it should be a commercial or, anyway.
But all too real, Rob.
Yeah, it is real.
The locomotion? I think there was a dance with it. No, it's not good.
All right. Here's my number 3.
Dope.
I'm playing it and we'll discuss.
I mean, we always discuss. Song is great. What are you talking about?
No.
This is Patrick Swayze.
I know. But somebody has to, like,
no, I
say
like
this is not. I'm sure.
This is good.
I'm sure you like it.
That saxophone's fantastic.
Oh, the saxophone is great.
I like this song.
It's not good.
It goes up in the car when I'm driving.
No, I'm sure it does.
Yeah.
And I'm sure this is one where does Laurel like this song?
Yes.
She does?
I'm just going to pretend.
No, I think you're
lying. I'm going to pretend yes. Lying, I think. The answer.
Yeah. So this is She's Like the Wind.
Yes. She is like the wind.
1987. Patrick Swayze. American actor and singer Patrick Swayze from the soundtrack to the film Dirty Dancing.
Yes.
You don't like Dirty Dancing, do you?
That is a bad movie. Good.
Okay, yeah.
But I do like the song.
Yeah. Reached number 3 on the U.S. Billboard Hot 100. Way too high.
No.
It was co-written. It was co-written by Swayze in 84. So he held on to this thing. He'd had this in his pocket for a while.
Gold in his pocket. Needed the time to spring it upon us.
And I don't remember what movie it was. I didn't leave it in my notes, but it was actually pitched for another movie that he was in, but it got.
Should be in it any got, Was know. It Roadhouse?
No.
That would have been good, right?
Roadhouse comes up in my notes here, just so you know.
Should have been on Roadhouse.
The soundtrack album was number 1 for 18 weeks.
It was.
The song is about a guy with some self-esteem issues. There's a girl he's after, but he thinks she's out of his league.
Yeah.
She's close by, but elusive, like the wind.
Like the wind.
That's so dumb.
It's very symbolic, Rob.
It's dumb. You kind of hope the guy will grow some confidence when he sings. Just a fool to believe I have everything she needs.
It's poetic. It's great.
Okay.
You're crazy. This is 3 songs now that you've put on this that absolutely, I just want to apologize to these songs. You do not deserve to be on these lists.
So Swayze was originally cast in Kurt Russell's role in Tango and Cash.
Oh, yeah.
But he pulled out to make
Roadhouse. Great decision. Yeah, best decision he ever made.
Yeah. So there you go. So what's your number three?
Well, I'm on to number
two. She's like the wind.
My number three was Locomotion.
Oh, that's right.
I'm on to my number two.
Because you went first. You got me all. Yeah, I went
first. You're all discombobulated.
Don't do that. So,
all right. Well, my number two.
I'm excited for my number two.
Well, I'm excited for my number two. It could have been number one. Ooh. It was really close.
But if we had the same one, that'd be so good.
It fell in.
Oh, no.
James Dean.
Rock on. Did I have that one?
Oh, no.
Nope. It was in my cut. This is bad. This is dumb.
You should see the video. The video's even worse.
No, I watched it on YouTube.
Oh.
Yeah.
James Dean.
So good.
I really hate that part the most.
So the thing that I thought... I thought that there was a different version of the song. Yeah. I looked all over because I remember it being a different version. Like somebody else did it, but this is the version.
Well, that's the most, what I would say, popular version. Did somebody else do another version that I have for you. I want to do a little quick.
Maybe this is the one I'm thinking of.
It's probably the one you're thinking of, but I have a sample of another version. In 2006, Def Leppard recorded this for some reason. And I would tell you, I thought they were going to come and save the day and rebirth this song for me.
They didn't.
They did. Definitely did not.
They just added to the...
They just made it a Def Leppard-y version of what Michael Damian already did. Which is the way that it's clear. I just think it's just not a good song.
Yeah, no different.
Yeah. It's just Def Leppard-y. Jimmy Dean. But they took out the guy going, James Dean.
Jimmy Dean. Jimmy Dean. Yeah.
They go with a little heavier guitar is what they do.
No.
But it's just, so that's the other version.
I don't like it.
All right. Well, just like, by the way, this is Rock On by Michael Damian.
Michael Damian.
That was the first version. Mm-hmm. Just like several before on my list today, this is a cover, which again, no one asked for. This version was released March of 1989 and was classified as glam rock / pop rock. There's a triangle on stage with the band, which is probably the best part of the whole video. All right. This song, for some insane reason, hit number one on the Billboard Hot 100 and number one in Canada. It was number one for 1 week in June of 89, replaced the next week by my first terrible song on this list, Wind Beneath My Wings. So a rough start musically to the summer of 1989 when the first couple songs out the gate are Rock On and Wind Beneath My Wings.
Wow.
That's a tough summer. That's a tough summer vibe going on there. The original version was recorded in 1973 by David Essex. And after hearing that, I think I just don't like the song. It has more of a 70s bohemian vibe to it, but still cheesy. Doesn't sound good. His version was also a top five hit. So apparently I'm the only one who doesn't like this song. Damian was a soap opera star, and this song was featured in the teen comedy starring the Corys called Dream a Little Dream.
Oh.
And if you're wondering how good Dream a Little Dream was, it has a 9% on Rotten Tomatoes.
What was the Corey movie with the driver's
license to drive?
License to Drive.
That's a great one with Heather Graham.
That's right.
So, and we heard the 2006 Def Leppard version. It was another cover. As I said, I was hoping it would be a good version, but it was not. It
not a good
just kind of sounded exactly the same. Yeah. So I actually appreciate the Michael Damian version better because at least it lives in kind of that late 80s cheesy pop era.
Yeah.
Def Leppard tried to make it a harder rock song in the mid 2000s, and that seems unnecessary. Like nobody wanted that. I just don't like the song.
Yeah.
I think no matter Space how it's filler. Recorded, it feels bad.
Yeah.
Every time.
I agree with you.
Rock on.
James Dean. James Dean. I love it. All right. So,
I just, when they were recording that, they're recording and there's some dude off stage, James Dean.
Well, I like how the-
His only job.
I like how Def Leppard, they call it Jimmy Dean.
Jimmy Dean.
They go,
yeah. Apparently they're big sausage fans.
Jimmy Dean.
We just came from breakfast.
Wow. That should be the commercial for Jimmy Dean.
Breakfast sausage. Yeah.
Jimmy Dean.
So, all right.
All right. I'm really proud of my number two.
Okay.
I think you'll agree, but maybe not. I'm shocked.
No. Okay.
You're listening.
No, you've styles been 50% wrong so far.
Okay, here we go. And I'm doing this from the beginning.
Oh, all right.
Just wait. You'll know it. Here it comes.
It kind of already sounds like Debbie Gibson.
No.
Oh, it's not?
You'll know it.
Oh, yeah. I like the saxophone. It's really good.
The name of this song is Songbird.
I like this.
Oh.
Is this just musical?
That's it.
Yeah, I like it. It's very relaxing. Feels like I'm in a dentist's office. Again, major worst. Like, that should just be a good, like, that should be on a good list just for the saxophone work.
No.
Like an elevator song, maybe?
Yeah, no.
Yeah, dentist office.
Wow.
David, we're ready for you. No. All right.
All right.
I don't think it's that bad.
But it's pretty bad.
All right.
Okay, but earlier you were talking about, well, we'll talk about it. So this is Kenny G.
That sounds like Kenny G. Yeah,
1987.
Perfect.
Songbird.
I like it.
His actual name is Kenneth Bruce Gorlick.
Great hair.
Okay. With that being said,
yes,
this is a man that has taken a lot of criticism in the musical world. He gets made fun of a lot. His place in music history has been questioned.
Weird saxophone.
Yeah. Right. But here's a guy that can go, yeah, screw you.
Yeah, check out.
Do you want to check out my bank account?
Exactly.
All right. Kenny G is one of the best-selling artists of all time. Yep. Period. It hard stop.
I think it's him and John Tesh.
No. So with global sales totaling more than 75
again, not
million,
to interrupt you, I want to hear this.
No,
but could you imagine a concert and we would be front row?
John Tesh,
Tesh, G, and Michael Bolton. That would be the concert. Bolton, Kenny, Tesh.
Yeah, I just saw that Bolton had some, brain cancer or something. He's got some, it's not good.
It's too much.
It's not good. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd like the, but I'd hope Tesh would do the, I'm a little, and Kenny can provide saxophone accompaniment.
Yeah. Sales totaling more than 75 million records. That's crazy.
Yeah.
He plays what's called a soprano saxophone. It's often mistaken for a clarinet.
So
it's a soprano saxophone. Yeah. It reached number 4 on the Hot 100. Just a musical, right?
It sounds good.
I wonder if you could. It's a kind of impromptu trivia, but it became the first instrumental to reach the top 5 on the Billboard Hot 100 since what?
Axel F?
Nice. No. Baby.
Oh, what?
No. Miami Vice theme.
Miami Vice
theme. By John Hammond.
All right. I was close.
1985. It's considered smooth jazz or yuppie jazz.
Yeah. I like it.
How did Songbird get its title? Kenny G explained it to the New York Times. The idea for the song came about imagining what it would be like to fly. And when you listen to it, it
makes me feel like I want to fly.
Yeah. It's been used in the movies Pretty Woman, Master of Disguise, Cars in 2006 when they make the truck go to sleep. And then, Psych, the TV show Psych, The Big Bang Theory, and Family Guy. A little trivia for you. Kenny G attended and graduated five. Oh, this isn't trivia. It's a little fun fact for you. Kenny G attended and graduated Phi Beta Kappa and Magna Cum Laude from the University of Washington.
I love it.
Where he studied for a major in accounting.
Good.
He looks like an accountant.
Looks like an accountant, yeah. But plays a saxophone.
There you go. So that's Songbird. Kenny G.
Kenny G.
I can't get into Kenny G.
I like it. It makes me feel good. It's a good relaxing song. You put that on, calm down.
I like that. David, we're ready for you now.
We're ready for you now. You're just in the waiting room. Got your Highlights magazine.
Oh.
All right, here I come.
Highlights. Oh, my gosh. So, yeah.
All right. Well, that takes us through all our number twos.
Yeah. Oh.
Ooh.
Well.
Another curveball.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, before we reveal.
Stop saying well. Let's do
our
that.
Our much anticipated number one songs, we're heading down to a little place we call...
The curtain. Oh, that fits today.
Yeah, I love it.
That sounds as bad as everything we've listened to.
As we put our list together, we often find it difficult to just rank 7 in each category, although in this case, maybe we should have.
Yes.
Yeah, but you disagree with that. So for this segment, we will each identify 2 more terrible songs that just fell out of our already bad 7 choices. We will also identify an honorable mention, which is a song we really don't like, and most likely you will not either. So with that, Dave, what unfortunately is your first cut?
My first cut is another slow, cheesy love song that usually rings true for me. But this one does not hit the right notes.
I like this.
Oh, you like this?
I do.
Oh, we found one you like.
Who is this? Why do I know this?
Because everybody knows it. It's not good.
Expose?
It is not expose.
Oh, dang.
It has some likeness to that.
Yeah, though. Who is it?
So this is I Still Believe by Brenda K. Starr.
Nope, don't know that.
All right, the K.
Don't know her.
It's for her actual last name of Kaplan, with Starr, of course, being a stage name. And by the way, bold choice. And I applaud the confidence in choosing Starr as your stage name. Not a good choice, though, with this slog of a song. It was released in February of 1988 and would hit number 13 on the U.S. Hot 100 at its peak. The song was written about a breakup in which the writer was confident the two would still get back together, although they did not. The concept of this song sounds perfect for middle school love, which is probably who the song was intended for. This song was also recorded in Spanish, and Mariah Carey covered it in 1999, which was also not so great. I included this because I'm a sucker for a good 80s cheesy love song, as I said. However, this one's just a little too slow, sounds a little formulaic, and the musical choices are not great to listen to. I'm sure there was a big prom wedding anniversary song, but it's too sappy for me. And not to offend any listeners, but if this was your wedding song, please look for an alternative. There are so many other great choices from the 80s you could sign up for. This song sounds like one of those Casey Kasem would have had for a dedication. Karen from Los Angeles writes in, "My husband left me, but I see him every day." Yeah, so this is definitely a dedication song, but I just don't enjoy it.
Well,
It's too slow. That's good.
It wasn't bad. Oh. Okay. So of all the songs on my list,
yes,
I think this is the one you're going to be even above Chicago.
It's hard to be above Chicago unless it's Steve Winwood. I'm not going to be that mad.
But I think of all the songs, you're going to be like, what?
All right.
But here we go.
I've already wutted three or four times. Oh, this is... I'm not wutting this.
Oh, okay. I can't... That's the way I like it. And I kind of like it.
No.
That's why I put it on my cup.
You don't like it.
I struggled. I debated. I really fought this song because I want to like it, but then I don't like it.
Nobody wants to like it.
But if it came on the radio, I'd sing it.
No, you wouldn't.
And then if somebody came, heard me, I'd turn it down.
Nobody wants to like this.
That's so good. Stop it. Anyway. All right. This is American singer and songwriter Dino.
Yes.
His real name is Dean Esposito.
Dino has made multiple appearances on our show, by the way.
Better known as Dino. He's an American DJ, apparently, singer, songwriter, and record producer. It came out in 89. It peaked at number 7.
Yeah.
Wow. In 1989. Trivia for you.
Okay.
Dino developed an even wider fan base when he became the opening act for what popular boy band in the summer of 1989?
Do I just get to guess?
Yeah, no, I'm not giving you choices on this.
Let's just take a shot in the dark and go New Kids on the Block.
Nice job. Yeah.
Who else? What other boy band was playing in 1989?
Nobody.
So right. That's all of our Dino information?
I really don't think it's worth.
Okay.
Well, and quite honestly, I tried to find stuff about him and there isn't a lot about Dino out there.
I got you.
He had his little...
He's a recluse.
He had his little moment and then it... kind of disappeared. So
that's a stinker. So you're good.
Nice.
Well, my second cut comes from an uber famous person who everyone loves, but again, just not a song I think hit the right notes.
Who's that girl? I like this.
No, I don't like it.
I do.
I'll tell you why I don't like it here in a second, but it's just not good.
And there's some Spanish.
I don't like this chord.
Right?
It's a confusing song for sure. it sounds really basic compared to some of her other music.
Yeah. She had a stringer.
This is Who's That Girl by Madonna. Yes, she made a worst of list for me. There are many Madonna songs I really like, but this is not one of them. It's pretty forgettable in her catalog, in my opinion. But again, Rob, as is usual, because I don't know what I'm listening to, definitely in the minority on this. The song was released as the title song for the 1987 movie Who's That Girl?
Never saw it.
Starring Madonna, which I will also admit I have not seen.
Okay.
But I was obviously not the only one that didn't see it, or you, because it bombed horribly at the box office. Yeah, it didn't do well at all. The song, however, huge, went number one in the U.S. Hot 100, number one in 8 other countries, top 10 in 13 other countries, and was the number one song of 1987 in Italy.
Italy.
All right. Yeah. So, ottimo lavoro.
Rob, what are you saying?
I'll let you look it up later. This song is another.
You're making up crap.
Our Italian listeners will appreciate the ottimo lavoro. All right. This song is another Latin pop infusion Madonna was working with after the success of La Isla Bonita.
That's the one I'm thinking of.
Which is a much superior song. In fact, several critics said she basically took La Isla Bonita and hit repeat with a much more uninspired result, which is what it sounds like. I don't think the Spanish-English mix works in this song. I don't like it. It doesn't fit the vibe like it did in La Isla.
Yeah.
And the chorus just becomes annoying because they say, "Who's that girl?" 7,000 times. So I've had enough of it. I don't want to know who that girl is at all. Despite all of this, it was nominated for a Grammy, thankfully losing to Somewhere Out There, and a Golden Globe, losing to I've Had the Time, parentheticals, of My Life from Dirty Dancing.
That's right.
So looking back, I think people admit this isn't a good song.
Somewhere Out There, like that little FIFO action.
Oh, yeah. She lost a FIFO. Yeah. I think.
So does she ever answer the question who the girl is?
No.
Who's that girl? They don't. You never find out.
Don't.
Well, that's dumb.
I truly think in 1987, Madonna could have sang Itsy Bitsy Spider and it would have gone to number one. Right? So around the world, everybody would have been like, oh, did you hear that new Madonna song?
It's so good.
Yeah.
It's about that spider.
Itsy Bitsy Spider to up the spout. No, it's bad. So I don't like it. So
somebody needs to make that out there.
That needs to be recorded.
A little
now?
Mashup, like
okay.
It's better.
We'll say no.
We'll say no.
Okay.
So this is my cut two.
Cut two.
Okay. This I will acknowledge that this cut two people probably like it. It probably holds like a but
half
but,
your songs people like.
But it's really annoying. This is an annoying song.
All right.
I've never really liked this song. Everybody just really likes it.
It has an inspirational thing to it, but I...
Yeah, that's it.
I can do it.
Inspirational. I know people that find it inspirational, but I...
Didn't?
I don't like it.
I'm a little confused.
Why?
Did you draft this in our 87 number one hits draft?
I might have.
I think you did.
I might have.
Does that make a lot of sense?
No.
So now you hate it, but you drafted it earlier?
I don't know if I
have to double check that 87 draft, but I thought this, because this was a number one song in 87.
Well, what, you know, I had to draft what was on the board, and then...
You left a Bob Seger song on the board for Club Nouveau.
I know.
If you drafted correctly, if I remember.
Now I got to remember which Bob Seger one it was. I had to choose.
It was the Bob Seger from the Beverly Hills Cop 2 soundtrack.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
See, this is one of those drafts I would have drafted him, and then I would have traded him away.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I'm like, I was on the clock.
Yeah.
I had to pick something.
A DFA.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're off the team.
Yeah. And then we it's trade bait.
Yeah.
We'll use you. Somebody out there likes you.
This is your Ryan Leaf. This was your Ryan Leaf choice right here.
And I was like, then somebody will pick him up. And
gotta
then we
get rid of him.
And then we trick people. Anyway.
Yeah. I don't love it either.
Yeah. I've never really, everybody always talks about how great it is in the pantheon of music.
I don't know who.
Yeah, I don't know.
I've never talked to anyone that says that.
No. This is Lean On Me by Club Nouveau. It was originally written and recorded by American singer-songwriter Bill Withers. I did not listen to that one, but I can probably tell you it's probably better. R&B group Club Nouveau, number one for 2 weeks in the Billboard Hot 100 in 1987.
It is much better.
Yeah.
I've heard the
original. It won a Grammy.
Oh,
here's the thing, though. It won a Grammy in 1987 for Bill Withers as the writer for the best R&B song. So I'm thank you, good. Club Nouveau.
Yep.
The song ranked at number 94 in VH1's 100 Greatest One-Hit Wonders of the 80s. Little fun fact, the group's original lineup consisted of Jay King, Valerie Watson, Samuel Prater, and a gentleman named Denzel Foster, and another guy named Thomas McElroy.
Okay.
Foster and Mack were considered pioneers of New Jack Swing, a genre they helped define when they landed a production deal with Wing Records, eventually signing the band Tony,
who has
been
nice.
Mentioned on this list many times.
So, well, they sound like...
So Club Nouveau has kind of a little, what do you call that? There's a family tree of New Jack Swing coming out of Club Nouveau.
They sound like one of those infomercials I see for like those lawyers. Foster and McElroy, have you been hit by an ambulance? Call us at Foster
King
and McElroy.
Watson Prattle, Foster and McElroy. Yeah, there you go.
He'll fight for you. That's what they always say, right? They'll fight for you.
6, 5, 3, 2, 2, 2, 2.
They always get those. They always get those people. I was hit by a bus, and Foster McElroy got me $5,000. Worst actors ever. All right. So, thanks to the law offices of Foster and McElroy.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
That takes me to my honorable mention, which is a particular stinky brand of stew here of music and lyrics thrown together again for no reason.
Oh, shut up.
Ah, this is great. Remember in 1989, you were like, you know what? I haven't heard Donny Osmond in a while. I wish he would come back.
This is your honorable mention?
It is. I don't like it. All right. Well, I have definitely unearthed a turd of a song right here that I actually forgot about. That's why it's my honorable mention. First of all, what the hell is a soldier of love? Is Donny fighting everyone to be loved? Is he fighting to love others? Who is he fighting against? It makes no sense. What is this battle that he's
fighting?
Raging?
He's fighting for her.
Who? He doesn't mention anyone in particular. He just says he's a soldier of love. Well, this song was released in 1988, but hit number 2 on the US Hot 100 in 1989, not ever being able to make it to number 1. And you know who kept him out of the top spot, Rob?
No.
It was your boy, Michael Damian, with Rock On. All right. There was a scenario there where the top 3 songs in America were Rock On, Soldier of Love, and Wind Beneath My Wings. That's a bad week on the music charts right there. The battle for number 1, no one cared about in 1989. You know, could you imagine people like at home? Hey, do you think Donny Osmond will get on top of Michael Damian this week? I listened to it. I hope he gets number 1.
Oh,
like Casey Kasem's like, all right, folks, you've been waiting. It's Michael Damian. All right. Well, this didn't chart. Didn't chart really anywhere else outside the U.S. So the rest of the world was smarter about this song than we were. The song was Donny's 6th and last top 10 hit, and the song is set to what is described as a post-disco beat. I added this not only because it's silly and generic, but I don't like when older musicians try to capitalize on new hip stuff and try to be relevant by making something in that genre their own. This sounds like anything New Kids on the Block or Michael Damian would have sung that were popular. It has no uniqueness to it, but good for Donny on capitalizing on the times. I'm sure his bank account, as we mentioned earlier, appreciates him storming the battlefields for love.
Oh, all right, man.
Yeah. So no thanks, Donny Osmond.
Well,
I read a fun fact that when it first came out, radio stations would play it like they didn't say who was singing it. And then when people started liking it, they're like, oh, it's Donny Osmond. Cause they were afraid if they said it was Donny Osmond from the start, no one would listen to it.
Yeah.
So,
well, you want my honorable mention?
Sure. Hey, we're together. We both thought it was super stinky. That song.
Of all the songs, 87 to 89.
Soldier of Love.
And we picked Soldier of Love four.
It sticks out like a thorn.
Yeah.
Like you could look at the charts and immediately go, oh, Donny Osmond, no thanks.
And I picked it because I didn't know it.
Nope.
And like you said, I was like, I'd forgotten about it. So I heard it. I was like, I do remember this. But I was like, no, it's not good.
No, it doesn't work.
No. So yeah, the only thing, let's see, you said everything. The thing that I have in my notes is that it was considered a comeback hit for him. Reached number 2. My notes exactly said, behind Michael Damian's Rock On. Became his 6th and last top 10 hit.
Yep. I think I stole all your info.
No, I'm reading this. I found this interesting. So the song was not initially released in the U.S.
Yep.
As he did not have a record deal. Then through a process, the cassette reached a program director over ABC. Then he was signed to Capitol. And yeah, and I have post-disco beat, exactly
what you said. Yeah, post-disco.
But did you know he was described in the 1980s as having an unhip image? This kind of goes into what you said.
I mean, yeah. He used to make out with his sister.
Yeah. And yeah, gross. And he said he was embarrassed that the Osman name was not considered cool. Mm-hmm. A publicist suggested that Osman purposely plan an arrest for drug possession in order to change his image. Clown. He says, quote, I remember hiring a publicist who figured out this whole campaign to get me busted for drugs and change my image, unquote.
Nice.
He was so
upset,
unhip.
Oh, so unhip.
And unmarketable. They said, you know what we need to do?
Drugs on you.
Let's get you arrested, and that's going to up your value.
To be fair, Motley Crue and them would tell you, yeah, it works. Like, I mean.
That's true.
Like, yeah. It's not the worst advice, no. Right? Yeah. So.
That's true.
Oh, yeah. So both the same. We have one crossover crazy. At Honorable Mention. That's good.
That's nuts.
Look at our brains sometimes.
3 years worth of music.
And our brains just synced right on that one.
Wow.
And you didn't even put it anywhere else. We both hit Honorable Mention.
And our number one.
Yes.
There's some conversation there too. So, but we'll see.
Okay. Yeah. Well, my number one.
Your number one.
You already played. Because I'm playing it again.
I did?
And I'm just going to let everyone hear it a second time for no apparent reason.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
And I wanted to go from the start because it starts out really bad.
Wow.
And it just gets worse.
I thought for sure you'd like this.
No. Come on.
I thought of all the songs, that was the one you were going to be the most rash of crap about.
It's a rash of crap for sure.
See, I like it though. I struggle with this one. I won't stop. You just cut it.
Okay, yeah. Done. Well, okay. I'm going to spend.
No fade out.
This is my number one. So I'm going to spend a little time on this. And I actually have a couple more sound bites because I think it deserves a little more attention than what it's actually gotten. So, friend of the show, Dino, is back. We give him a hard time, but I'm sure.
Friend of the show.
Yeah, we give him a hard time. I'm sure he's made more money on these awful late 80s, early 90s songs than I've ever seen in my life. So good for him. This is a ridiculous dance song released in 1989. Number seven, you gave a lot of the chart stuff. Clocking in just above, as I said earlier, Soldier of Love. At number 50, okay, so it was the 56th best-selling single in 1989.
Wow.
Just above number 57, Soldier of Love. Uh-huh. And both of those songs were above these songs.
Okay.
18 in Life by Skid Row. Love Song by The Cure. Uh-huh. Songs by Bobby Brown, Guns N' Roses, Aerosmith, Michael Jackson. They were above all those songs. So I don't know what happened there. I'm sure those of you out there that bought all those Dino CDs and tapes know you messed up. You screwed up somewhere and you know it now. So I've said it before, but this is the most common late 80s sounding song. Synthesizers and a beat that I'm pretty sure was in every dance pop song. Remember that keyboard I told you about? I think this beat was on that as a pre-programmed song. You just hit it and you get the Dino beat, right? But Dino. It's just his uh-huhs in the middle of the song are off-putting. In fact, you know what? They're off-putting enough that I'm going to make you listen to them. I assume since you picked this song, you've listened to most of it.
Yeah.
But I want to highlight a couple areas. And these uh-huhs are a little gross, I think. So. No, wait till you hear the girl part.
Yeah. Oh, so, yeah.
Okay. So that I don't like. All right. Overall, this is as cheesy as it gets. Oh, hopefully, we're running out of Dino songs to feature because I believe he's been on our show more than like Nirvana, Pearl Jam, or other actual musicians. By the way, while he's doing all this singing, there is a spoken line in the middle of the song that, again, I think is important. And I think you need to hear it because it's really stupid. And when they were writing the song and someone like, oh, Dino, check out this line I wrote for you. And then he was like, yeah, I'm going to sing that. I'm
gonna sing the crap out of that.
I'm not going to sing it. I'm going to read it.
Yeah.
Stop, stop. This is what I like your hair. So wide, sunglasses, now smile. That's the way.
Oh, wow.
Wait, it gets worse. That's the way. Now dance. Now, there's one more little part at the end here again is going to be off-putting.
I like it. Nasty.
Yep, there it went again. So, we've gotten multiple versions of the So, in case you missed it, this is the line he spoke. Stop. This is what I like. Your hair, so wild. Sunglasses and that smile.
Now dance.
That's the way, that's the way, now dance. All right. So do you think there's anyone, Rob, anywhere that if they're at a party or in the car, hears this song and freaks out and is like, oh, turn that up. Oh,
turn it up.
Is that I Like It from Dino? Lipstick.
I have to be honest. I think if we were at a party.
Yes.
And I was a few Rolling Rocks in.
A DJ.
And this came on.
Yes.
I'd probably be like, oh, crank it up. It's no, Dino.
No one would crank this. It's
I'm
Dino.
Struggling with this song. I like it. And I put it, that's why I put it in my cut, because I don't know. I think I need counseling. I don't know if I like it or I don't like
Do
it.
Do you like
I don't
the part know. Where she goes,
It makes me uncomfortable.
You see like some 12-year-old kid in their room? Yeah, no, I don't like it.
So. What is that sound? What is,
I don't know.
What is he making?
I'm pretty sure I know what the sound is, but when you're 12, they're like, oh, they're having fun. All right. So we have two crossovers because I also had the Dino. But I would tell you Dino, and again, Donny Osmond stuck out like sore thumbs on this list.
Yeah, so. We're going to have three.
Ooh.
Yeah.
3 years and we had three songs of the same. How did that happen?
Because they're crap.
Yeah, well.
I don't claim that we're experts ever.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that would be a wild.
But I thought you would go out of your way to go, he'll pick that song, so I'll go somewhere else.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I did. Well, here we go.
Okay.
This is my number one.
Oh, you went.
I bookended
that number one. You know, we did that on the other one. You had distance to start. I had distance at number one.
That's crazy.
Again.
Just
turn it off. We've already done this.
And then an eagle.
So bad. We're just upsetting everyone. Do you hear that piano synthesizer thing in the background is horrible. Like, listen to it. It's horrible.
Ooh, drums.
Mm.
Ooh, so a bass line in there.
Dum, dum, stop it. Dum, that, dum. It sounds like the Come keyboard's broken. Ding, 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 ding. It's like Schroeder from the Peanuts playing the background piano for Bette.
All right.
Come on, Bette.
Frequent guest of the show, Bette Midler.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway. She's been on two shows, both of our stinker shows.
Yeah.
Best of the worst, I guess we can say.
So this is written in 92. It's been sung by other folks.
Yeah.
Highest charting version of the song to date was recorded in 1988 by Bette Midler.
All right.
We talked about Beaches. We talked that it went to number one far too long. It won a Grammy. We talked about that for both Record of the Year and Song of the Year, which is stupid.
I had that
certified platinum. In 2004, Midler's version finished number 44 in AFI's 100 Years, 100 Song Survey of Top Tunes in America's Cinema.
There's no way. I can think of 100 songs better than this song.
Okay, so here's another one. So Idina Menzel sang Wind Beneath My Wings as a duet with Kristen Bell at her successful audition for the 2013 film Frozen. So of all the songs they could pick, she's trying out for this major Disney film, and she says, Kristen, you know what Bell. We should do? We should do a duet.
It's not even a duet. It's not even a duet. Like, how'd they break it up? You got this part, I'll take this part.
And we're going to sing that.
Like, if you're doing a duet, why don't you pick a song that's actually a duet?
Of all the songs. Anyway, the worst thing I read, though, in all of it, and you didn't have this.
Oh, okay.
And maybe you didn't. I wasn't listening because I do that often.
Yeah, once in a while.
I get so concentrated on my thing that I don't listen.
I gotcha.
It was ranked number 51. Bette Midler was ranked number 51. On VH1's 100 Greatest Women of Rock and Roll.
Absolutely not. Rock and roll, first of all, that's crazy.
Thank you. Okay.
If they're doing an adult contemporary or something, I still don't want her in there. But look, I like Bette Midler in some movies and stuff. She's funny, but songs, I can't get on board with this.
No.
So this is just too much. All right. So we had three crossovers.
We did.
We had Dino.
We did.
We had our man out on the battlefield, our soldier of love, Donny Osmond.
Soldier of love.
You know who he's a soldier of love for? His sister, Marie Osmond. That's who it was. So they were a little weird back in the 70s.
You talk about a drug bust.
That would have been
start something about him hanging out with his sister.
They were already hanging out in the 70s. There's been a creepy vibe between the two of them. So, and then we had, of course, Bette. We started with Bette. We ended with Bette.
Yes.
Appropriately for this. So I had a couple other notably.
The E is silent.
Yes. I had a couple other notably bad songs in 87, 89. I had a Love You Down by Ready for the World.
Oh, I didn't.
From 87. I did not enjoy that. At This Moment, Billy Vera and the Beaters.
Man.
That wasn't good. I Don't Want to Live Without You by Foreigner in 88. Really, that really got close to being on my list. And a band I really despise, Gloria Estefan and the Miami Sound Machine with 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, I don't need you to teach me to count. Thanks, Gloria. Thanks, Gloria.
What about True Colors, Cyndi Lauper?
Yeah, here's the only reason. Okay, so here, I'll tell you my True Colors story. No. I don't love Cyndi Lauper, but in 1986, I watched the World Series probably for the first time because I'm 10.
Yeah.
And the Mets, the amazing Mets or whatever they were, they beat the Red Sox. They came back to win game six, Buckner's legs. And then when it was all over, they did clips from the whole World Series and they played True Colors.
So
when I think back on it, I remember that 86 World Series and Daryl Strawberry's hitting home runs. And it was a good time for
Daryl Strawberry.
Yeah. So,
you know, one song that I liked growing up.
Yes.
And then I did some research for this list and I was going to include it, but I was like, man, I like it though. Oh, okay. The Final Countdown, Europe.
I love that song.
Great song.
Great song.
And then I read the lyrics.
If you would have put that on there, I would have tossed you out of the studio.
They're like leaving Earth and they're going, it's like they're going through space. And I was like, this is dumb.
I mean, you should have already been excused from the studio for your blasphemy on Chicago and Peter Cetera, but that would have been the final. That would have been the Final Countdown for you. So.
Oh, yeah. Well done.
So those were your bad songs.
You're so fast.
I also had Shake You Down. Yeah, Shake You Down, Greg Abbott.
That was on a lot of lists that people didn't like. It creeped them out, apparently.
I had another one.
Father Figure.
That was Father Figure.
Because I liked it, but I was like, creepy.
It's creepy, but I like it. Yeah, I had one. It was The Twist by The Fat Boys and Chubby Checker. That wasn't good.
Oh, you know one that I did? I had Love in an Elevator, Aerosmith.
Love it.
I like Aerosmith, but that one was, I always thought it was kind of an odd.
Mrs. Doubtfire. Odd song.
If I could turn back time.
Turn back time.
Anything by New Kids on the Block.
Dude looks like a lady is Doubtfire.
Love in an Elevator.
Is still good. I like that video too. Girls just dancing in an elevator.
Going up.
And the mannequins.
Going down. She's
the mannequins,
just going down.
The mannequins turn to life. It's like that Kim Cattrall movie, Mannequin.
Let's see what else. Hanging Tough. Yeah.
I like you had that, I think, on another countdown. Yeah.
Oh, Groovy Kind of Love.
That's on my list. We don't need to rehash that.
So anyway.
There you go.
Anyway.
Well, that's enough bad songs, I think. And even though you didn't have all bad songs, it's enough bad songs.
Yeah.
Well, if you'd like to contact Rob and I, which we always look forward to, you can find us on all the social media sites from Facebook to X, the artist formerly known as Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, to which we've provided links in the show notes. But you can also just Google Totally Asinine's Recall, and all those locations will pop up, and you can say hello.
That's right. And you can also find us at our website, which is Totally80s90s. Totally 80s 90s recall at podbean.com. And finally, feel free to email us at 80s90s recall@gmail.com, where you can ask questions about current or previous episodes, suggest future show ideas, or simply just say, hey, what's up? But don't give us a big rambling spiel about what's really up.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Yes. Right. Or laundry detergent.
Oh, yeah, don't do that. We look forward to hearing from all of our listeners worldwide, from the US all the way down under to Australia.
It's down under. You gotta say it right, man. Nobody hard R's down under.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Finally, we do have a merchandise store.
We do.
You can access through the show notes or our website where you can find t-shirts, a couple other items, whether it's our logo, some shiny plums, or no fancy goodbyes. Maybe you'll find something cool and funny to rock and be the envy of all your friends and family everywhere you go.
Yeah. And I will add, if we've had some actually pretty clever, like people have written in and said, hey, you know what you need to do is a shirt that says blah. And so if you have an idea for a shirt,
tell us.
Ship it our way and we'll see what we can do.
Like, here's an idea for a shirt. Rob, pull your head out of blank. Chicago is fantastic. That's an idea for a shirt.
I'm just going to make a shirt that says Cetera sucks.
No one would wear that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You'd be fired immediately.
And I get beat up and punched.
Even Kip is upset about that. All right.
Oh, okay.
Don't come at him with that.
Anyway, that was aggressive. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Hey, closing thoughts?
Closing thoughts.
All right. I have a quote here.
All right.
Yeah. It says, I don't believe in good music and bad music anymore. I'm through with that phase of my life. Sometimes I just want to feel good, so I put on a good record. But mostly I'm more of a businessman than a music fan. So I'm listening to music in terms of, is this effective or not effective? Mm. as we listen to our, as you listen to our playlist,
is it effective?
Think through it through that lens. So, gotcha. It was this song effective or not effective? And I thought that was, and that was actually Questlove that said that.
Oh, nice.
From, you know, the Roots and
Jimmy Fallon. Definitely had 10 ineffective songs. You had about five ineffective songs. So we almost have a playlist here. So, well, your ears may thank us because we've come to the end of this episode of Totally 80s and 90s Recall. We hope you've enjoyed, or perhaps not, a look back at what we think were the not-so-greatest hits from 1987 to 1989. If you like today's musical choices, which I would question for sure, we've provided links. Where are the links, Rob?
They're all over the place.
No, but what's all over the place?
What are you saying?
For our playlist. If they want to listen to all these songs, where would they find them?
You can find them on our show notes.
Show notes. And Spotify.
Spotify.
Apple.
Facebook.
Amazon.
Amazon.
So,
Everywhere.
Everywhere. Yeah. Okay.
Google.
That way they can find the playlists.
Yeah.
Well, finally, we'd like to thank all of our listeners, whether first timers or subscribers, for hanging out with Rob and I. Hopefully we gave you an hour or so of some laughs. And don't forget to tune in for all new episodes of Totally 80s and 90s Recall every Tuesday.
Every Tuesday.
Always.
What are we doing next time?
Ooh, next time. You're going to like it because it involves a ton of research. So we're going to look at the top albums from 1992.
That's a good year.
It was a good year. But we're going to be doing it draft style. Mm. So we're each going to select our 10 favorite albums from that year.
Okay.
And it'll be a back and forth draft.
Okay.
And we'll see who comes out, me with the better team.
All right.
And obviously you're going to draft someone that later you're going to say is a bad song, but we'll see what happens.
All right, fine.
All right, fine.
I don't care anymore.
You don't want anyone leaning on you.
I don't care anymore.
So I like that song, Lean On Me, because it came from that movie with Sam Jackson.
I don't know.
Not Sam Jackson. Morgan Freeman.
Oh, he's like a
he's the principal.
Yes,
yeah, Principal Joe.
Hit the bat.
Yeah, Principal Joe.
That's right.
Where they sing he makes them sing the song.
I know.
Fair East Side.
I know. I'm sure it was very inspirational.
It was inspirational.
But I don't like it.
Yeah, he did lock the doors, though. It was a fire hazard.
Yeah, I think he'd be fired.
Yeah. Well, do you have anything else?
I don't have anything else.
Fancy goodbye?
No fancy goodbyes.
Chicago. And Peter Cetera. You suck.
Cetera sucks.
You suck.
Cetera sucks.
And that's why I say you suck.
Bette Midler sucks.